438, 437, 436. Can the Jaguars make something happen? Brunell under center. Sends Keenan in motion from the near to the far side. He'll take the snap and drop back to throw. Pressure coming. He's jumping out to the near side. Pump action cuts across the 50. Breaks a tackle at the 45. He's at the 40. Mark Brunell running to the far sideline. Turns the corner. 35-30. Down to the 25. An inside move. Leaping for the 21. Mark Brunell with a masterful run of 29 yards. And the clock continues to run. 35 from the 16. Mark at the line of scrimmage. Takes the count, takes the snap, turns, looking for Jimmy in the end zone. Touchdown, Jaguars! Touchdown, Jaguars! Touchdown, Jaguars!
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, that's what we needed right there from Tyler Devitt, a little dose of the good old days, a little dose of do you believe in miracles, Logs. We may need a few around here. They have Tell the Truth Monday. We have Tell the Truth Tuesday here. We have Jeff Logman's eyes on the film, and let's get down to the nuts and bolts of what we saw. We'll talk a lot about it today. If you have questions for Jeff, you can certainly call in at 641-1010. Send your text on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at the same number, and tweet the program at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, L-O-G-S-5-6, and at 1010XL Fat Tony. The question of the day is, what is your current number one reason for optimism for the Jaguars in 2015? As Jeff, I'm trying to, I can't do that show that I did yesterday every day. I will be locked in a closet in a very dark place if we go much longer with those. So I'm trying to turn it around, but obviously we want the straight scoop from you. And let's start with Blake Bortles. Just prior to the pick six, how did you evaluate how he played up until that point?
I thought he was okay. And if his wide receivers make the catches,
maybe be a little bit better than okay.
Yeah. I mean, he might have been spectacular to start that game, but all of a sudden you have some of that, which is, adversity, whatever you want to call it for him. And then I think that, which was out of his control, and then you have the pick six, which was clearly in his control, I think steamrolled him, and I'm not in his psyche. I'm not Dr. Freud, but the performance after that point, it was not good enough.
But you've been in plenty of locker rooms. You've seen many dynamics play out on the football field. Okay, do you think it was a case of, boy, we came in here thinking we really could get something done, and as time goes on, that pressure, like, what happened? Why aren't we executing? And then you make that mistake, and all of a sudden you're down eight, and it feels very similar to where you were last year oftentimes.
But you got to fight it.
I understand that. But how do you do that? How do you get through that moment and put that aside when you haven't had the success on the field to back it up yet?
I think it's a big challenge for Gus Bradley and his staff. I mean, to me, it falls on the coaching staff that is their challenge now going forward, to be able to take this team, which is completely different than the first two teams, and say, hey, look, we're not what we were last year. We're not what we were back in 2013. It's time to write our own book and let's go, and I think putting pressure on is, and Gus Bradley kind of talked a little bit about this yesterday, about when he was, continually asked about anxiety and putting anxiety on the players. He said, we're going to demand more and they're going to feel it. And that's what has to happen. That's what has to happen, because this team is capable of more than what they were able to show on Sunday. I mean, in all facets of the game, whether it be punt return, kick return, offense, defense, field goals, extra points, they're capable of more than what they showed on Sunday. That was the disappointing thing to me. I expected this team to come out on Sunday, and I thought that this was a strong opportunity. And when I say strong opportunity, I never say, look, it should have been a win, because it's the National Football League. Things happen. Sometimes things happen at the last minute. But I wanted to see the game competitive until the end. And that's what I expect out of this team on a week-in and week-out basis this year, is to be competitive. A lot of people were saying, look, this team might get to 9 wins. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. They got to learn to win. And that's why I said my expectations are probably a little bit lower than a lot of people, and that, hey, it's 7 wins. And if they can get to 7 wins, I think that's a good season. But learning to win is a huge step that this team has to take, and they have to change the mentality of expecting to win. And I know that that's not something that they focus in on. But you have to be able to fight through the ups and downs, because the hardest thing, I think, the transition to make for a young team that hasn't had success from the preseason to the regular season is that it's a 60-minute game. It's a long game. In the preseason, you're playing 20 plays, maybe 30 snaps, maybe 35 snaps at the most, and that the game is long, and there are many opportunities to be able to sway the game one way or the other. And it was almost as if when things went bad, they felt that that opportunity had passed them by. No. There's still plenty of opportunities. Keep playing. Keep playing and just make plays.
All right, we will discuss that and continue along in that vein and take your calls and questions and comments, as we mentioned, at 641-1010, both on the phones and on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Loggeman here with you. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. We're live at Everbank taking your calls. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up as well. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Well, I thought he did a nice job. I think that for him, we felt like it was an opportunity where you should see him become more and more involved, I think, as the games go on. And, you know, for him to get as many carries he did in the yards, and, you know, I think it was a good start for him. And I think that he'll gain confidence through it.
That's your head coach, Gus Bradley, talking about the play of rookie running back T.J. Yeldon. Thought he did quite well in the first half. Not as many opportunities in the second half. Although, looking through the play-by-play, there were a couple of opportunities
it was okay.
He had the ball. He got stuffed a little bit early, and they just got in some bad down and distances to be able to run the football in half number two. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Loggeman here with you on 1010XL Logs. What about Yeldon? What did you see on tape?
I thought he was very good. You know, and I was probably, I guess, one of the biggest pessimists.
Skeptical.
Skeptical. I mean, you know, show me. I mean, the only thing that I had seen on game day was, you know, 8 carries for 10 yards. And so I was like, wait a minute. You know, why should he be the starter? You know, typically in a locker room, you want to have a guy prove it in some type of game fashion before he's named a starter, and it's hard to name a rookie right out of the gate, you know, and have that kind of be accepted in the locker room. And he did a fantastic job. Credit to him. It's not that I didn't think that he could do it. It's just, you know, you wanted to see it, you know, before he's actually named the starter. And congratulations to him. I thought he did a great job.
Well, I thought he looked quick on a couple of ankle breakers.
He's got ankle breaking moves. You hit it right on the money. I'm actually going to look at that on Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com this week, because he's got great vision and great anticipation, and he's got almost like this kind of jump step to the side that he can do. That what you're talking about makes the ankle breaking tackles kind of happen. I thought that he did a really good job of lowering his pads at the point of contact to gain the extra yards. I thought that he protected the ball very well. Early in that game, Charles Tillman came in with the jab, tried to knock the ball out, and I was concerned about that going into the game, and he held the ball very securely. So credit to him. First game action out. He was, you know, the biggest concern, I think, with most rookies in a game like that is protection. How will he do in protection? He's stout. He's stout. He's strong. He's going to bring it on a blitzing linebacker or a DB. I thought he was solid and aware. And
apparently, his sternum is tougher than Luke Kuechly's head as well. What was Luke Kuechly thinking? I mean, have you ever seen a guy that accomplished make such a poor form tackle attempt? It wasn't, you know, just very strange that a guy like him would put himself in that position.
You're watching him on film for, you know, quite some time now. You don't ever see him do that.
Right.
You know, and it was almost as if he was kind of lunging, and because he was afraid of maybe that little ankle breaking move that he had, and put himself in an exposed position. And I was just glad to see that that was not anything beyond a concussion. I'm not saying concussions are mild, but I've seen tackles like that before firsthand in New York, where Dennis Byrd ended up at Mount Sinai Hospital with a broken neck because he had the top of his head lowered into the chest of a teammate of ours, Scott Mercereau, and it didn't end up so well. So I'm glad he's okay. I know he's in the protocol, and hopefully everything works out well for him, because he's a fantastic player.
641-1010 is the number. Phone lines loading up already. If you want to get in and talk to Jeff Loggeman and company here, that's the way to do it. James, you're up first this morning. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Love the show. It's becoming a habit, me calling in after a Jags loss. But I've got 2 points. One, my panic started when this summer we were talking about Blake Bortles and the way he threw the ball and the tight spiral. Nobody talks about Phillip Rivers and his delivery because the ball gets where it's going. That's the number three pick, and we're talking about his footwork and his technique. That was scary. Secondly, since when did we start using the preseason as any kind of a gauge on how somebody's going to be? If we did that, Gabbard in the Jets game looked like Joe Namath.
Well, there's a difference.
You're talking about one game. Right. I mean, we're talking about the consistency that Blake showed throughout three preseason games, the consistency that he showed throughout practice, the change of his delivery, how it's become more concise, compact. His footwork's been better. He's always had great pocket presence, but he didn't display it after the pick six on Sunday. You know, so, I mean, look, we're not trying to say that everything was solved. We were just trying to say come out of the preseason. I think anybody that has any kind of a educated eye would say that there are reasons to be encouraged the way that he played in the preseason. And I'm not saying that all of a sudden now, you know, throw it out the window that he's not going to be good. But, I mean, he's got to bounce back, you know, and I think he's capable of that. I think that he is a very mentally tough individual. I think physically he's tough. And I think that he's going to be able to bounce back. I think he's going to be able to do that. And I think that this served as a little bit of a wake-up call to not only him, but also the team as a whole. That, look, it, you know, what you did doesn't matter what you're going to do now. You still have to be ready to rock and roll and be prepared and still be able to be committed to a 60-minute game. Not a 30-minute game, 60-minute game.
I think the thing with Phillip Rivers, to me, you wouldn't teach his mechanics as a kid coming up, but they're repeatable, and he does it every time, and he is accurate with the football. I've said this about Blake, Jeff. I don't care what his mechanics are if you can duplicate them and deliver the ball consistently on time, and that's the reason he's working on his mechanics, because he's not at that point yet. Rivers has a funky motion, kind of that shot put kind of look in motion, mm-hmm. but it's the same, and he's had it ever since he stepped onto the field at NC State, and that is the way he plays.
It's the Jim Furyk of football throwing.
Exactly.
Motions.
You wouldn't teach that, Tony, but he does it every single time right. He gets that club back to the ball.
And I think it is interesting to point out, too, that, you know, Blake Bortles looked good in the preseason. Teddy Bridgewater looked outstanding in the preseason. Carr looked good in the preseason. These second-year quarterbacks all looked good in the preseason, and then game plans got put in against them, and it slowed them down, all three of them a little bit in week one. You hope that they make adjustments and get better going forward into the season, but all three of them, when they faced their first game plan of the season, did not fare well.
And you look at all three of them. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater did not have Adrian Peterson contribute much in the ball game. I thought he looked poor.
What was last the game
night.
Plan with that? That was. Have you ever seen, Jeff? Did you watch the whole game? Did you at least?
I didn't watch the whole game, but I watched the halftime.
Have you ever seen a quarterback who can only get it 30 yards past the line of scrimmage on a Hail Mary? I mean, my goodness, they're at midfield.
That was weird.
He was throwing balls to the 20-yard line. Then they took a 5-yard penalty and threw another pass to the 20-yard line, and it looked like that's all he had on the ball.
Yeah, but he had another deep ball in that game.
He did have one good deep ball to Mike Wallace kind of bounced off his chest. You're right, he did have a nice
one. That ball was like 60-something yards in the air.
That's why it was so strange, though, in that situation. You're just trying to, you know, get that tip ball at the goal
line.
He's
one of those guys, I mean, it's kind of hard to watch him. He's almost like Phillip Rivers in a way that he has a different delivery. But, you know, you talk about Derek Carr. And Derek Carr got hurt. I mean, how do you grade anything with Derek Carr? Blake Bortles had three critical drops in that ball game, and then you had a turnover by Allen Hurns, you know, so that all of a sudden your rhythm is gone completely now as an offense, you know, if those catches are made. You know, that's why I've said it here. The one thing that I wish that they had, and they tried, because they tried to sign Randall Cobb, is to have a veteran presence at the wide receiver position. You know, and I think that until balls are being caught consistently, you need to play the ones that are going to catch the ball consistently. Pretty simple, right?
It seems that
way. If you can't catch it, you can't play. If you can catch it, you'll play. Who's the one guy that's caught everything?
Brian Walters.
Time for Brian Walters to see a little bit more time.
Well, he may now, too, with Rashad Green.
Well, Rashad Green's in the protocol.
Right.
And then you also have an injury to Allen Robinson. He was able to finish the game. But I don't know what percent he finished the game at. You know, but time for guys to catch the ball to play.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Nick in Arlington, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to y'all. I would like to make a comment saying that I think what frustrates the fans is that when we get a new coach, and that goes for all teams, when they get a new coach, they try to put their own team together. And for Jacksonville, we've been losing so long. And when we try to, when the coach try to build his own team with rookies and they don't pan out as quick as we want them to, and I think that's the frustration.
What do you think?
And referring to coaching, I mean, I think that what I take away from that is it's a question about coaching. You know, the first 2 years, I don't think that you can grade coaching with this football team, because this roster was completely turned over. The first year was a wash, and they knew it. The second year was a commitment to youth once again, a wash. But I think now, if you want to start grading coaching or grading, you know, the organizational structure, whatever you want to do, I think starting at this year, I think that that's fair. But it's only been one test. Now, there's still 15 more to go.
Agreed. But I think that's one thing fans are watching. Is this coaching staff doing enough to develop the young players that they're bringing in?
Well, and my response to that is that in the preseason, we saw progress. Okay. And we saw great progress with the addition of Greg Olsen, Doug Marrone, Kelly Skipper, and everybody on that offensive side of the ball and that coaching staff. Let's not go ahead and give ourselves a speeding ticket here.
Right.
It's one game.
Warning. We'll get a warning. Go on your way, sir.
Caution.
Get that taillight fixed, Tony.
But let's not come to the final, you know, summary here.
Right. I got you. All right. Let's get another call in here. Let's go to Phil up next this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Phil.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show. Wanted to give you what I think needs to happen. It's a philosophy, and then I'll give you some specifics of it, and that is, I think the Jaguars need to be really fearless in everything they do as an organization. What I mean, on the field and off the field. So on the field would be things like, and what I mean by that is, whether you're going to win three games or four games or six games, you're not a winning team right now. So you have to take chances, you know, on fourth down from midfield, you know, in a few yards, don't punt, go for it. You need that fourth down sometimes as an offensive play because you're not as good as the other team. It's worth the risk. It doesn't matter if you lose 20-9 or 30-9. So things like that, you have to show the players, the fans, that you're willing to fail and take, like, what I like is like a Pete Carroll approach. And he makes big mistakes that fail, but he knows he's going to get some that win. And that's a winning attitude. You know, things like that. And off the field, things like Stephen Morris, keep the guy. Chad Henne's going to get you nowhere. Stephen, and then, you know, Bortles, if he, you know, not necessarily his fault because the team around him, but say, you tell them, and you tell the team, three or four games, you know, everyone's on notice. The next guy comes in, and he gets three or four games to prove he's a better quarterback. But it's not Chad Henne, nothing against him. But in other words, the organizational philosophy has to be gutsy, a lot more gutsy. And I look at Shad Khan, a guy who became a billionaire by creating a new technology. It starts with him. I mean, he's that kind of guy. Make that, you know, enable the organization to think that way. And, you know, just start having, and okay, so I look at the 49ers, Hayne. He hasn't broken out yet, but the guy Hayne, the rugby player, the guy's going to be a phenomenal, I think the guy's going to be a great weapon. So find another guy on earth like that. There's another guy on earth. Bring him in.
You lost me at Stephen Morris. You should have kept Stephen Morris. I mean, you just, everything else you said just went out the window when you said we should have kept Stephen Morris.
Well, he lost me at the play Blake for three or four games and tell him if he's not getting it done, you're going to go to Chad Henne or whoever's next. The streets are not loaded with viable starting quarterbacks in the National Football League.
Look, Stephen Morris is a journeyman quarterback at best. That's what he is, okay? Just because Chip Kelly picked up Stephen Morris
to play third string.
To play third string doesn't make, you know, this organization fear. Or have fear.
Stephen Morris
of failure.
Coming back to bite him right.
No,
now.
Come on. I mean, just go out there with any kind of football eye and watch the performance of the quarterbacks in the preseason. There's no question, preseason games, preseason practices, that Blake Bortles is the best quarterback on this roster. He's a young player. Don't get all caught up in the one performance, and that this one performance is going to be the, what you're going to see throughout his career.
Forget the quarterback aspect of it. Is there credence to this team needing to be a little bit more aggressive, maybe going for it a few more times on fourth down and just, you know, try to create their own good fortune?
Well, they've done that. I mean, they've done that in the past. I mean, they've never shied away from going for it on fourth down. I mean, they are probably one of the more aggressive teams in the league. I know that some would like them to be a little bit more aggressive, and that's okay. I thought that in the game that they could have been maybe a little bit more aggressive as far as putting more people out into the routes instead of just two and three. There should have been four at times. I think there was a little concern about the Carolina Panthers' ability to rush the passer. I get that, you know, first game. But at the same token, we're not talking about a Carolina football team that's capable of scoring 35 points or more. You know, your game plan has to be able to fit your opponent. And I thought that the game plan fit the opponent. And if you want to talk about being aggressive, the long ball to Rashad Green that would have put them down inside, what was it, inside the 5-yard line.
Yeah, down to the two.
That's aggressive. The long ball to Allen Hurns, which would have taken them across midfield into the territory of the Carolina Panthers and given them field goal position immediately, that was aggressive. You know, don't question, you know, the play calling and all that as being aggressive. Could they have been a little bit more aggressive maybe early on? Yes, they could have been. Were they not aggressive at all? Oh, no, absolutely not. They had plenty of shots down the field offensively.
All right, we got to take a timeout. Bottom of the hour here. Phone lines will remain open to you at 641-1010. Also, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at the same number. And we will get to more of your calls. We'll also hear from Gus Bradley coming up a little bit more throughout the course of the show as well. With Jeff Loggeman and Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today, Tuesdays, brought to you by Kenny Way & Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Tuesdays here on Jaguars Today, brought to you by Kenny Way and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. You can, of course, tweet us your thoughts on the fan feedback spotlight question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you, currently, what's your biggest reason for optimism for the Jags in 2015 as we try to turn those frowns upside down on this Tuesday? Jeff, got a bunch of them coming in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, so let's address a few. I got this one from Dave in Palm Coast. He said, here's a question for Jeff. Could he please address why he thinks the tight ends were not targeted at all? Thanks.
Well, I mean, it's a great question. I was hoping that they would be a little bit more involved, and they were, and a lot of times it was in protection, you know, to kind of keep control of that Carolina Panthers front. They also do a great job with blitzing. You know, the strength of the Carolina Panthers is also their linebacking core. When you've got Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis, two outstanding players, a first-round draft pick, and Shaq Thompson, you can kind of understand why they would want to try to maybe limit the exposure of those guys. So I think that they felt that it was some good matchups. That's why you saw a lot of three wide receiver sets with Rashad Green.
But even after Kuechly went out, you didn't really see.
Yeah, but I mean, once you have a game plan, you got a game plan. You know, you can't change and all of a sudden say, okay, well, let's just change our personnel groupings and our game plan up completely because they had an injury. Now you can change the focus of maybe what you attack within the structure of that. You know, so, and still, even though Kuechly is out, he's still the replacement. AJ Klein is on the field for their nickel package. So, I mean, you still have the ability to take advantage of that, you know, change in position. Yeah, I was hoping to see, when they got down in that tight red area, a target for whether it been Clay Harbor or Mercedes Lewis when he was split out the one time wide left and he had a defensive back on him. I thought that would have been a favorable matchup. I'm not saying it's a great matchup, but it's a favorable matchup. Wanted to see the tight ends get involved more, and I think part of that has to do with also is that the quarterback, you know, just didn't find him. Either didn't have the time when it was dialed up, or didn't find them when they were dialed up, you know. So there were opportunities that just didn't get shown because the ball never got thrown their way, and then a lot of times they were staying in for protection.
Here's on the positive side for a couple of things here. I believe many fans are overreacting, says his text. I'm tired of losing, and I want something to cheer about. I think the team will come together. You and Jeff feel that it's too early to write off the season. I cheer for seeing Jeff on the Jumbotron for the tribute that they did to the old team. No, we're not writing off the season.
No.
No, of course not. It's week one, but I think the frustrating thing for me, Jeff, as I look, you know, people say, oh, there's 16 teams in the same position. Granted, there are, but many of those 16 teams have something to fall back on in terms of a recent track record of success. If you're Seattle, you're not panicking.
No.
Right? If you're Indy, you're not panicking. Indy has opened up like 1-4 the last five openers. Okay. They've been there. They've done that. They know they've overcome it. So if you know you've seen that same group of personnel turn that around, you know, you have something to fall back on. With the Jags, you don't have that track record of success. And what this game was like was eerily reminiscent of games last year where they'd go into the 2-minute drill. They'd kind of scramble it down the field as they did, get some points on the board before the half, and then second half, boom, the offense is completely shut down.
And you bring up a great point in that they have nothing, they don't have anything to fall back on. And I think that's why I said the greatest challenge is for this coaching staff, and it falls on them, I think, going forward, because you have to build and change the mindset that has, you know, has been around here. And the only way that you can do that is to demand, expect more. And I think that Gus Bradley talked about making it uncomfortable, and as he should. You know, you got to make it uncomfortable. You have to have expectations that are high and not expectations that are unrealistic. And I think with this first game in the book, you want to react and not overreact. Because if you overreact, I think you risk, you know, losing what you have built prior to that game. I mean, you have been building. I mean, you have seen an improved team in the preseason. So let's not lose sight of the fact that they have improved the team, but now you need to start seeing it on Sundays when they count.
Here's another one from the 904. Blake scares me when he says to the media, quote, they took him away, end quote, referring to Mercedes being double covered. It shows low resilience. Everyone knows Brady will throw to Gronk and he'll still throw it. Quarterback coach, hint, hint.
Hint, Mercedes is not Gronk.
Right, and Blake is not Brady.
No.
And B, you look at last Thursday night's game, he found the matchups. When Gronk was uncovered or single covered, he was killing him. But early in the game, he wasn't forcing the ball to him. He was going to Edelman. He was going with a lot of the underneath stuff to Edelman and Amendola and dumping it down to Deion Lewis. And I mean, there are times when you've got to say, you know what?
Critical moment, you say, I'm going to my
guy. I'm going to my guy, and he's going to make a play over your guy or your two guys no matter what. But for the most part, don't we always hear take what the defense gives you, right, mm-hmm. and exploit that if you've got the players to take advantage of it.
And I think that's what Blake did a really good job of with in the preseason, is that he really did a good job spreading the ball around, whether it been to the wide receivers, the tight ends, the running backs. He did a really good job at that. And I think that early in this ball game, you know, discounting the drops, I thought he did a pretty good job of that and was able to see the field. The one play, though, that kind of seemed to change that was the pick six. You know, he really kind of locked in on it. Josh Norman made a great play. And then at that point, it changed a little bit. And he's got to get back to what he was like in the preseason and what he was like in the first half, because if the drops don't happen in the first half, that's a different ballgame.
Let's get another caller here. Robert, you're up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a two-part question for the professor there. I hear a lot of people talk about Paz and that he struggles in coverage, but I see him, you know, making plays like the interception and stuff like that, and maybe you could help me understand what people mean by that he struggles in coverage. And my second question is, I was listening to Prisco and them yesterday, and their question came up about Jerry Sullivan, because since he's been here, it seems like drops are a constant problem, and I really appreciate it, and I'll take your answers off the air. Thank you.
Well, I'll start with Jerry Sullivan. Jerry Sullivan is one of the best wide receivers coaches at any level, pro level, college level, it doesn't matter. You know, so we also have to remember, too, is that we're talking about two second-year players and a rookie wide receiver. You know, you can't make a great wide receiver overnight. And so I think Jerry's doing a good job. The one thing, though, that I was kind of curious on, and I'm going to look at this on Film Room Friday, is that you look at those three drops, all three of them. What were the wide receivers doing?
Jumping.
Why?
Don't know. I don't know. To bracing for contact. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. I'm trying to guess why they're doing that. I don't know.
What do you see what is Reggie Wayne? What did Marvin Harrison do? When they had a ball,
Catch it?
They caught the ball away from their body.
They caught the ball away from their body, and they adjusted the route to come back and attack the ball.
Gotcha.
And
they didn't wait on it to get to them.
You saw all three wide receivers kind of elevating instead of elevating to the ball or coming back to the ball. And the balls all clanked off of Chess. Hello? Hands. Greg Olsen preaches something in practice all the time when he's talking about people catching the ball. Be dominant. And be dominant means hands, high point,
snatch,
body control. And those three instances, not one of them where did you see the receiver dominate the ball.
Got to take a timeout. Coming back, this date in football history, the drive around the NFL, more of your calls, as well as some of the thoughts of Gus Bradley yesterday meeting with the assembled media as we started our week here. It's Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, right here on 1010XL, 92.5F.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Chock full of significant birthdays today. In 1940, we're talking about pass rushers on the break. How about this guy, Merlin Olsen, offensive lineman, part of the fearsome foursome with the Rams.
Have you ever met Merlin? Talk to him?
Yeah, actually I had. Well, he passed away now, but I interviewed him once at the Super Bowl.
He's unbelievable.
He really is. That whole group was an unbelievable group. But Merlin Olsen, born in this date in 1940, lived to be 69 years old, passed away in 2010. I'll get to some particulars about him coming up here in a minute. 1961, Dan Marino, born on this date, 54 years old today, and a guy that brings a smile to Jaguar fans' faces, 62-7. And Will Shields, born on this date as well, went to the Hall of Fame this year. Marino's in the Hall of Fame. Olsen's in the Hall of Fame. Guys, I need total Pro Bowls for Merlin Olsen, Dan Marino, and Will Shields combined. How many Pro Bowls? And rank them. Who's got the most? 1, 2, 3. Logs, what do you say? Total Pro Bowls and who's got the most?
Total Pro Bowls between, I'd say, 30.
30? Okay. How do you think they rank?
Will Shields might have the most.
Okay.
I would say Marino would be 3 and Merlin would be 2.
Be 2, Tony?
I was going to go with 27 and I had the same order.
Okay. How about 35? Okay. Merlin Olsen pulling down 14 Pro Bowls and 5-time first-team All-Pro. Will Shields, a dozen Pro Bowls, another 5-time first-team All-Pro. And then we've got Dan Marino with 9 Pro Bowls and 3-time first-team All-Pro.
I knew Dan would be down because, I mean, just think about the quarterbacks that were in the AFC at that point. I mean, it was pretty good quarterbacks during that era.
Yeah.
Merlin Olsen, though, just to go back to him, I mean, I had the chance that he was calling games when I was a player and had a chance to talk with Merlin many different times. I don't know if there was a nicer or smarter ex-player that I ever played with that had no ego. I mean, he was just class.
He's Father Murphy.
The definition of class.
he really was a super nice guy. Let me just get through this. Got one more, 1962. Ernest Biner, very good NFL running back, but unfortunately for him, known most for this.
Draw to Biner. Ernest Biner. Fumble. Fumble the ball, and Denver has recovered. Oh, my. Or have they? Let's wait for the official to unpile them.
There's a war going on under that stack.
There it is. Denver's ball at the 2-yard line.
1987 AFC Championship game, ripping the Browns' guts out. The drive and the fumble are probably the two things most people remember about Cleveland Brown football post-Jim Brown, I would think.
I remember watching that game. I was still in college, and was at Crutchfield, which used to be an electronics store years ago. I don't even know if it's in existence anymore, and was looking at buying a set of stereo speakers. And, of course, they had the televisions everywhere, too. You know, they had all the electronics. And I think I stayed in that store for like an hour and a half past when I needed to be there watching that game. It was incredible.
Oh, it really was. And, you know, shame for Ernest Biner, who's a very good player. And that's,
he's a great guy.
That's what he's known for. I've never talked to him, never met Ernest, and but that is what he's attached to, obviously.
He had a great career, and unfortunately, that's what most people remember him by.
That's the way it goes sometimes. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. If you're in the market for a family dentist or you need cosmetic work done, you can't find any better. Call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Washington wide receiver DeSean Jackson, we mentioned him yesterday leaving the game this weekend with the hamstring injury. He's expected to be out 3 to 4 weeks with a hamstring strain. The Atlanta Falcons expected to sign offensive tackle Jake Long, who at one point was a number one overall draft pick today. The in-game saga between the Giants and Cowboys from Sunday night continues to evolve. Giants running back Rashad Jennings said that Eli Manning told him not to score on first down. Why? Because Eli thought that Dallas was down to one timeout. Why? Because Odell Beckham Jr. caught a first down pass inside the 5-yard line. Now, why was the clock stopped? Because Dallas had jumped off sides. A penalty the Giants declined, but because of the declined penalty, the rules in the league are that the clock is stopped after an accepted or declined penalty inside the last 5 minutes of the second half, inside the last 2 minutes of the first half. So it actually, the Giants get the first down inside the 5-yard line. Dallas gets the extra timeout because they jumped off sides.
But you're telling me the essence of the story is that the Giants are dumb on a lot of levels.
Oh, it was a complete mishandling of that entire situation.
That's Eli.
Yeah.
That falls on Eli.
Right. Even though the play call's there, if he has the presence of mind just to go down, get touchdown,
it's
a short field goal, which is shorter than the current extra point now. Let the clock run. You still make it a 6-point game, which you ended up doing. And at worst, you miss it, and you leave them, you know, pinned deep in their own territory, and a field goal only ties it.
Yeah, I mean, when you're Tom Coughlin in that situation, you would think that your quarterback would have enough awareness and game savvy to make the right call and make sure that things are happening right. But also, as a head coach, you got to make sure that he's aware of that.
Right. You got to say, hey, look, you can't. There's no incomplete. If the play is there, you make the play. If not, make sure that the clock continues to run.
You know, I've never been a huge fan of Eli Manning, and I know that a lot of people think that he's great. He's, you know, he did win 2 Super Bowls, but I've just never gotten the impression that he is an elite quarterback. I've never thought that he was an elite decision maker. And most players at that position, the older they get, the better decision making that they have, and I don't think he's ever been that.
He's had 2 great postseason runs in
his
career.
Two phenomenal postseason.
And he actually played extremely well last year. Once they got going under Ben McAdoo, that offense.
Yeah, but what was his rating last year? I remember in the preseason game I was talking about this, and that his rating last year was, you know, 80s or something like that. And that was, and his completion percentage was in, I think, like 59%.
No.
Yeah.
Last year?
Yeah.
Tony, give me some numbers on Eli.
I might be wrong.
I tell you what, Tony.
I might be wrong on the passer rating, but I know I'm right on the completion percentage.
Let's let Tony check it out while we get Matt up on the line next
year. Because
he
had a career year. He had career numbers last year. And I remember looking at it and saying, this was his career best year. And his completion percentage was not that great.
What was it, Tony?
Last year it was a completion percentage of 63.1.
That's his best.
But that's not 59.
No.
I knew it was somewhere in there, but I mean 63%? I mean, what's Aaron Rodgers' career?
Well, he's Aaron Rodgers. You don't have to be, you know, Aaron Rodgers.
Talking about
not everyone's going to be,
you know, his
Aaron
career
Rodgers.
Best year is 63%. What was touchdown interception ratio?
It was 30-14.
Which was, I think, one of his best ratio seasons.
That's what I'm saying. He had one of his
still
best
threw 14
last
picks.
Year. Right, but 14, I mean, 2-1 is not bad. Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if you saw this stat yesterday.
I did.
4-1.
Yeah.
Career touchdown interception ratio. No other quarterback anywhere close to playing as many games as him has a 3-1.
He's the best all time if you looked at the numbers.
In that statistic, he's clearly by a margin. He's the best all time, mm-hmm. And I continue to think he's the best quarterback in the game J.J. Watt's got an argument for best player in the game, I think.
Well, I mean, come on. Quarterback is always the best.
I understand the importance of the position. I'm talking about what he's asked to do. Is J.J. Watt or Aaron Rodgers more dominant in his position? I say J.J. Watt is more dominant.
It'd be a great debate.
Than Aaron Rodgers.
Be great. I mean, that's a debatable point.
We'll hey, you know what? Come back in March. Let's do it. Let's get a Matt up next. Matt, false start trying to go to you last time. Here we go. How you doing this morning?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good.
I was wondering, we talked about the draft players not really performing as well as they should be, or Gus Bradley's not coaching the team that well, you know, Caldwell drafting these certain players. Now, my question is why is there nothing going to the point of Greg Olsen? Now, he's never really done anything in the NFL to really expedite or show that he's that talented of an offensive coordinator. He's never stayed anywhere super long. So why did we bring him back here when, if you go on just last year's stats alone, Oakland Raiders were ranked 29th offensively and the Jaguars were 28th?
Jeff?
Well, let me first say this. Greg Olsen had a rookie quarterback last year and
who earned accolades for how well he played.
Absolutely. And I don't think that the Raiders had a lot of talent anywhere around a young quarterback.
This week right here. Right.
I mean, it's, and to criticize Greg Olsen, what has he ever done? Well, Greg Olsen is one of the most respected offensive minds in football. Well, he's bounced around. Well, yeah, he's bounced around a lot. And one of the reasons why that Greg Olsen has bounced around a lot is that he's married to another coach, and a lot of his career decisions have not been decisions based on what's best for Greg. It's been what's best for them. You know, so that's one of the reasons why that he may have bounced around a little bit is because sometimes he stayed in places longer than he should have. Sometimes he's passed up promotions because his wife is a coach and so that they can have a happy marriage. I think he's a fantastic coach. I think that what he's been able to do with this offense to establish consistency is tremendous. Now, we didn't see a lot of that consistency on Sunday. I get that. But I go back to say this once again. Let's not jump to conclusions off of one game. I still, even though they're not a large percentage of the grade, I still go back and I look at the preseason and say, that was not a mirage. That is not something that you completely discount. What we saw in the preseason will come to fruition for this offense, but it's got to be better and it's got to start showing now for this football team.
Here's what Gus Bradley had to say yesterday. He was asked about play calling specifically, which obviously ties right into this question. Here's Gus.
Yeah, we took some shots downfield, had some plays downfield, mixed it up with the run and the pass. You know, the first two drives, there were three and outs. And then after that, it felt more like, I was thinking, more like a preseason where we had an 11-play drive, a 10-play drive, and a 9-play drive. You know, the 11-play drive was a field goal. The 10-play drive was a fumble in the red zone. And then we had a 3-play drive off a sudden change that we missed a field goal. And then a 9-play drive in a 2-minute that was a touchdown. So after those first two drives where I thought we, you know, maybe got punched in the mouth a little bit, we settled down and came back and had good drives. We just didn't capture the red zone opportunities.
He's dead on. I mean, he's dead on. I mean, they didn't start fast, but they were able to overcome it, look more like they did in the preseason for a stretch. But then the pick six happened and everything kind of went south.
Let's hear more from Gus Bradley coming up here in a moment. It's a Tuesday brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. He's Jeff Logman. He's Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Logman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Well, I think that it felt like we want to be a team that is aggressive, takes chances, and I didn't think I saw that right away in the beginning part of the game. Through passes, I think some of the passes, you know, with Blake, give the receiver a chance to make a play. And some of them were, you know, without even an opportunity for our receivers to make a play. And just overall, I think the passing game and the execution of it.
Gus Bradley talked about yesterday on things he wanted to see from the offense but did not. That was what that answer was in response to. And I think what he's clearly saying about Blake is, hey, the ball's 5 feet over a guy's head. There's no chance for that guy to make a play. for you. Obviously, they didn't help him out by making some of the makeable plays, Jeff, that they could have as well.
You know, but one thing I will say is that, you know, it's the first game of the year, and they came out run, run, pass. You know, first down, second down, third down. I'm okay with that, you know, because it's the first game. The adrenaline is flying. The last thing in the world that you want to have happen is something like what happened to the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl in New York, and all of a sudden you got a bad snap, and all of a sudden something bad happens. You know, let the nerves kind of calm down, run the football a couple times. If you have to punt, fine, fine. Just let everything kind of settle down. But now, I mean, be critical of Blake and not having an accurate ball early in that game. I'm okay with that. I mean, the ball's sure got to be better. But the play calling early in the game, I'm okay with that. Let them settle down.
Look, they talk about wanting to be a team that can run the ball even when the opponent knows they're going to run the ball, right? I mean, that part of it, people say you're too predictable, but sometimes good teams, like last night, good luck knowing that Carlos Hyde was going to get the ball. That man was not going to be stopped last night. And, you know, sometimes if you're trying to establish an identity, don't you almost go to an extreme a little bit to, or I don't even think it's an extreme to open
you
up.
Overemphasize it,
right?
Sometimes. I mean, and I'm okay with that. You know, the one thing area that I wish that was a little bit different when they had first and goal at the goal line, and they came out, I think, right away and threw the ball. And
ran the fade to Robinson.
Yeah, the fade to Allen Robinson.
Rashad Green. Was it Green on first down?
I can't remember who it was.
It was,
I think
Green,
it was Green
on
first down.
And Robinson on third.
And then Allen on third. They ran the ball on second down. If you had Toby Gerhart in that situation, what do you think you would see?
Well, you're hoping you're going power.
Tyson Alualu at fullback, and here we go. We're going to pound it into your face right here for six, you know. And so I wish that they had Toby Gerhart available for that. I would have liked to have seen that at that point.
Here's Gus Bradley talking about the good things that the Jaguars did on Sunday.
We had a chance to talk as a team and went through some things. I mentioned to you last night that it's, you know, today's meeting will speak and watch the truth. And I think as a coaching staff, we got a chance to evaluate the tape and see where we're at. You know, some things became clear on what took place and what we need to work on and focus on. You know, I think, just to recap, I think offensively, as you look at the offense, some good things. We ran the ball very well. We wanted to try to establish the run and, you know, over close to 100 yards rushing. First half, second half, very pleased with the effort there. Still need to get better in that area because of our commitment to it. I'd like to see that those numbers become even higher and more effective, but it was a good start to it. I thought we handled pressures pretty well. They brought a lot of double A-gap pressures, a lot of different types of pressures. Felt like our players were prepared for it. They executed it and did some good things as far as that.
You know, coming out of Sunday's game, we were talking a moment ago, Jeff. You mentioned the first drive, run, run, pass, and you were okay with that. For all the fans out there who didn't think they were aggressive enough, they made up for it. They threw the ball 39 more times. Blake had 40 pass attempts in that game. They only rushed the ball 21 times. For a team that's trying to establish an identity a little bit as a running football team, do you think they got away from it a little bit at times in the game? I mean, what led to 40 pass attempts in a game that for the majority of it was a one-score game?
Well, I think that, you know, the end of the game, once you've got a two-score game, obviously at that point, then it becomes all pass.
Sure.
You know, could they have stayed committed to the running game a little bit more? Sure. But, you know, at the same token of that, you know, Carolina's got a pretty good front, and you got a quarterback that was coming out of the preseason that was pretty good. And then you also had him throwing the balls down the field that would have been chunk yardage plays that the balls were just dropped.
Yeah.
So, questioning play calling, I think, to me, is not where the application is in this instance. I really don't.
Miami coming in, obviously, with a very talented front of their own, right? And Dominican Sue.
They're good, but they're not playing like they used to. Watched a lot of their film, and Dominican Sue just played okay against the Redskins. Olivier Vernon didn't finish the game with an injury of some kind. Cameron Wake, I thought, was very effective. I think he's still playing at a very high level. The guy that came in for Olivier Vernon, I actually did done my game boards yesterday. His name is Terrence Fedi, or Fedi, however you pronounce his name. Second-year guy out of Marist, the big school that produces a bunch of kickers. He's terrible. I mean, he's terrible. I mean, I'm sitting there watching him going, really? This
so
guy's
you,
on an NFL
do,
roster.
What do you do to attack Miami? Are
you run? I mean, I think
you run it to
you
slow
do
down the
which,
rush.
And here's the thing: if you're Jed Fish, well, let's see. What did they give up last week?
if you're Jed Fish.
Yeah, yeah. I'm giving you two different perspectives
here. Gotcha.
Okay. If you're Jed Fish, you look at the Miami Dolphins and you look at what they did against the Redskins and what worked against them, and then you're going to make a game plan fit, much like Jed used to do with the New England Patriots against the Indianapolis Colts. Well, we're going to run this play because the Patriots had great success at it. Well, the play we don't have in our playbook, Jed. Well, that's okay. We're going to put it in this week. No. You do what you do. Good offenses run their offense. And I think this team, regardless of opponent, you do what you do best.
I guess we're trying to figure out what that is.
Well, and part of that is figuring it out. But also part of it is what you're committed to. You're committed to an offense under Greg Olsen that has run the football and then throw it on occasion and have good balance. But you want to make sure that you can run the football effectively. So as far as game plan goes, I don't care what the Miami Dolphins have. I don't care what they have available or who's hurt or who, whatever. You can change the emphasis, but you can't change who you are. And this offense needs to establish what they are, which we saw this offense start to establish what they were in the preseason. Do what you were, do what you did in the preseason, and establish and run your offense.
Jeff, you mentioned the preseason. Gus Bradley yesterday talking to the media talked about the differences he saw against Carolina versus what we saw from this team in the preseason.
The truth is also this, that I thought that as an offense we played very cautiously. You know, we didn't want to make mistakes. I thought that some of the things that we saw in practice carried over to the preseason. In practice, we saw them do a bunch of really good things, win in the preseason games. Those things carried over to the preseason games. And I think, you know, our hope and our thought was that it would carry over the regular season, and it didn't. It didn't carry over to the game. And that part was frustrating, but... you know, it shows you that, you know, as far as the mindset, these guys, some of the things that they do in practice, got to have it to where it carries over to games.
And when he talks about, I thought we were cautious, I think a lot of people can confuse that for play calling. No, I think a lot what he's referring to is that we need to just play without
thinking about the consequences.
Thinking about, well, what happens if there's what? No, just play. And so it's not so much, okay, well, we should have been running the go route on this second and two. No, that's not what it's all about when he's talking about playing cautiously. It's about individuals just saying, hey, look, you know, I'm confident I'm going here instead of I'm not worrying about, well, maybe they're going to run the twist game here. No, you just go. You know, you play. And I think that that's what he's referring to on an individual basis. We can't play cautious. We just need to play.
Gus also talked about the team not making adjustments on Sunday.
Also, I didn't think we adjusted well. Didn't think we quickly recovered. We talked about adversity is going to come our way. Adversity did come our way with the interception in the second half or a touchdown. And I don't know if we could say we quickly recovered from that. I think if you look at the series drives after that, the number of punts we had, not getting into Carolina's territory in the second half, demonstrated that. And that was pointed out to our team that sometimes misfortune happens, but how you adjust and how you handle it is even more important. Didn't feel like we handled it very well.
And adjusting is not so much from an X's and O's standpoint. It's about handling the adversity and still playing. And I brought up a point early on that I thought that Blake took a step back after that pick six. You know, it's much like a corner who gets burned. Forget about it. You got to play the next down. It's much like in basketball, to use a different sport analogy, if you miss a key three-pointer in the first half, are you going to stop shooting a three-pointer if you're a three-point shooter? No, you keep shooting three-pointers. And so Blake, I thought, was affected by that pick six. And I'm not saying that he's mentally weak, but I think that this is a great learning experience for Blake that, okay, this is what you did last year. You're better than that. You're capable of more than that. And you're not the same player that reacted that way last year. And we're not the same team that we were last year. We have to change that mindset. And I think that that falls on the coaching staff of changing the mindset now. Now this is the first point that this team has ever had adversity in this first game of the season with a different football team. They need to get this team over that mentality. Uh-oh. Maybe this is happening again, or here we go again. That mentality needs to be buried because it's not the same team.
Gus Bradley yesterday also talked about a unit that I think played pretty well. That is the entire defense for this Jags team.
Defensively, I thought we played pretty well, very well. Matter of fact, against the run, did a nice job against a really good rushing team. I thought we played the pass pretty well. For the most part, there was tight coverage on the passes. The sudden change, we count on three sudden change opportunities where Carolina had the ball in really good field position. Thought we handled the sudden change as a defense, handling adversity defensively, did very well, and great effort. Really, really good, strong effort. I thought there was some sloppiness in technique at times and fundamentals, but our effort showed up and compensated well for it. The truth also is that we gave up three really long drives, and that's what really affected us defensively. Those three long drives ended up in a field goal, and a touchdown. And within those drives, I think if you add it all up, the third down conversions for Carolina, they were 6 for 9 for close to 70%, 67%. So we didn't do a good job in those drives on third down, and we missed some opportunities. We had opportunities for sacks. We had some penalties. We had a missed interception. And it's those drives, I think, you know, really showcase that we didn't capture all the opportunities that we had. And I think that we also, at times, were offensively, I felt like from practice over to the games, it didn't carry over. Defensively, it did. What we do in practice does carry over the games, and that's good and bad. Some of the fundamental issues that we talk about, the discipline issues that we had on practice, you saw those things show up on the game field as well.
Were there anything in particular where, you know, Gus just hit a lot of the highlights on those long drives? Was it just a series of different things here and there? Obviously, you know, Cam Newton running for a couple of third and long conversions on that final drive were backbreaking. Were there themes, or was it just a mix of different things that allowed Carolina to sustain some of those drives?
A mix. One of them was injury related. You had a third and long. I think it was third and nine. You had D-Mac, Demetrius McCray, playing the nickel position because Aaron Colvin went out with a shoulder injury, and his awareness to the slot receiver and his own spacing was not good. He should have been favoring. I think it was Cotchery that caught that ball. He should have been leaning towards that because you had Paul Posluszny running down the third wide receiver to that side, so I didn't think that was a very good play by D-Mac. You had a call by Bob Babich on one third down, I think it was, to where they brought a blitz and then Cam Newton was able to escape and run. I don't like the blitz against quarterbacks that have the ability to run at critical situations. I said this before the game, keep him in the pocket, make him be a passer. To me, you shouldn't have done that. If you're going to do something like that, make it a spy type situation. I think in that situation, you had Sergio Brown, who was a spy type, and he got caught leaning on one side. And I mean, once a quarterback like Cam Newton gets a crease on that, he's going to make you pay. And I got to give credit and kudos to Cam Newton. He is a fantastic athlete. He is a gamer. He is a playmaker. I didn't give him a ton of credit before the game, but if you allow him to do things like they allowed him to do at times, which is to make off schedule plays and to hurt you with his legs, then that you're not doing a good enough job on defense. And this defense should not feel good by any step of the imagination about giving up 13 points. They shouldn't. I mean, the Carolina Panthers offensively are not a great offense. Not at all. You also had an opportunity at the end of that ball game to get off the field. I think it was three different third downs on that 8-minute drive.
Yes.
Make a play. I mean, make a play. So this defense isn't finishing up this game saying, well, we did our job. We only gave up 13 points. Our offense needs to do a better job.
Quickly, the timeout that was called on third and long, right, which set up the first Cam Newton conversion, right, deep in their own territory. From your vantage point, what did you see, and was it the right decision? Was there too much confusion trying to run Scooter off the field?
Well, they had 11 men on the field. They just didn't have the right personnel grouping. It wasn't like they were trying to get Dan Scooter off the field because he was number 12. You know, they had 11 and the personnel grouping was wrong. In that situation, you can't give the Carolina Panthers an opportunity when you're not in the right personnel grouping. So a wise call by Gus Bradley, because if they convert it right there, what are you sitting there saying?
Then I would say,
why
right,
didn't you call
right,
a timeout?
Exactly.
You didn't have the right personnel grouping on the field.
Yep.
The play just needed to be executed better after the timeout.
Yeah, right. Tackle Cotchery. He's 2 yards short of it. Don't let him fight through and get a first down.
Which is another.
It's all about spacing and making your drops relative to where the routes are at. And D-Mac did not do a very good job on that play.
All right, we got to take a timeout here. We will come back. Take a look at the fan feedback question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asking you currently what's your biggest reason for optimism for the Jags in 2015. We'll also talk special teams with Jeff Logman. It's coming up next. Jaguars Today rolls on Tuesdays, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, Divorce. MenOnly.com. This is 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. Tuesday's brought to you by our friends at Kenny Lay & Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today live at Everbank. Jeff, I mentioned going into the break there, we're going to talk special teams. By that, I particularly mean Jason Myers. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not an auspicious debut for
him. Wait a minute, we're not going to give Rashad Green a pass for fielding that punt on the 3-yard line,
are we? We'll talk special teams in its entirety. Let's start with Myers, first of all. Okay? How concerned are you that he seemed to not rise to the occasion?
Well, I mean, I'm a little concerned, but at the same time, you know, it's not like they were terrible hits. I mean, both of them were pretty close, although
I didn't
close
think
doesn't
that extra
count.
Point wasn't all that
wasn't
close.
That bad. It wasn't that bad. It just kind of drifted right. You know, I mean, he hit it right, and then it kind of drifted right. But, I mean, yeah, you're concerned. I mean, he's a young player, and you've never been there with him to know how he's going to react, you know, so there's concern. So you just, you know, you committed to him, and now you're gonna go along for the ride, but you're also willing to ditch that ride at some point to make a change if you have
Which
to,
is
if you're the
nature,
general manager.
Nature of that position.
That's the way it is.
Right.
That's the way it is. And because of that, that's where the concern is for a young player, like I said, because you've never been anywhere with him. You've never had to see him face adversity. You don't know how he's going to react to having a missed field goal and a missed extra point and see how he's going to bounce back. So, you know, we talked about this a few weeks back, and as far as making that decision of Jason Myers and Josh Scobie, that's a faith-based decision when you commit to a young player like that. And because you're making a decision on a lot of things that you don't know. And so, you know, how do I think that he will handle that? I don't know, Mike.
We'll have to find out.
I mean, we're going to find out.
Right.
You know, and hopefully he's mentally strong and he stays focused. And from watching him in the preseason, we know that he has a tremendously talented leg. And that he has been consistently accurate all off season. Much like the offense, we didn't see it translate over to the first regular season game.
Rashad Green catches a punt at the 2, which is a play you're referring to. And as you guys described it, a rookie mistake. You just can't make that play.
Nope. And then that's the type of play that, are you saying, you know, is the psyche of the team, why, you know, is it another point of adversity that you created on yourself?
Right.
You know, and it is.
And in his mind, he's got to be thinking, boy, I want to make a play here, right? He's trying to be aggressive. I'm not saying smartly he's trying to be aggressive, but that's got to be why he's doing it, right?
Well, I don't know why he's doing
it. Or maybe he
just
loses track of where he is.
He's losing track of where he is. You can't do that. I mean, that's – where do they start on that drive?
Inside the 10.
Yeah, it was like the 10, 11-yard line, 9-yard line.
Something
you're talking
about.
Something
like that, yeah.
But it changes your mindset. When you're an offense, you're running out on the field. I mean, wouldn't the mindset kind of be changed? I mean, because,
right.
You know, we're talking about a team like you talked about earlier. The team has a loss. They've been through the battles and have been able to fight back and have success. Well, this is a team that hasn't been able to do that. Here's a negative or a point that you've got to be able to overcome, and you haven't been able to do that in the past. And so here's something that shouldn't even have happened.
All right, let's get to the fan feedback spotlight, Tony. We asked folks, let's have a reason for optimism. What gives you some optimism right now?
Here's what we got from Wiggle Man. He said, still Blake. From Colby, Yeldon on offense, give that man more touches. From Anthony, he just said, ha! From Paolo, he said, Julius Thomas might give the spark we need. Hopefully it won't be too late. From Matt, Yeldon, he averaged 4.2 yards a carry behind that line. Run him 3 times, and what do you get? A first down. From Isaiah, TJ Yeldon, he got me excited. Best thing since MJD. From Eric, it's Bortles and Yeldon, young guys with upside, and both didn't get help on Sunday. From Brian, eliminate the mistakes, drop balls, pick 6, and it's a different game. Hashtag we can do it. From Irish Jaguar, there's no point being miserable. It's football. Anything can happen. From Daniel, when Julius Thomas gets back, this offense will all come together. Room for optimism. From Jose, just because I'm a fan of the Jags and football, I still believe we can still do it. From Demetrius, I'll have zero optimism if this team can't develop its drafted players. The excuses are growing thin. From Eric, time, many opportunities with 15 games to go, but the clock is ticking, and they have to perform ASAP. From Dusty, TJ Yeldon running behind the right side of the offensive line. Hashtag and my sweet jersey. Hashtag albino tiger. From Dino, that the season will end. From David, it's still early and the team has to tighten up. Week one rarely predicts the season. From Joey, I'm optimistic it will get better because it can't get much worse. Only reason I could think of. Hashtag maybe next week. From Michael, that there's only 15 more weeks of it. Hashtag shut up, Randy. Hashtag hash brown selfie. And from Cristiano, any given Sunday, any given season.
All right, let me give you a couple of quick things off the text line. Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Let's go with this one. If your hopes and dreams are based on the preseason, then be prepared to be disappointed. There's nothing. Hang on. I've lost my place here, and this one's not on Tyler. It's on me. If your hopes and dreams, here we go. Going back. All right, preseason. Stop referencing preseason. Preseason means nothing. You're playing against guys unemployed for the most part. I don't agree with that. First team plays first team for the most part. If your hopes and dreams are based on preseason, prepare to be disappointed. You're saying there you had some expectations based on the preseason.
Absolutely, I did. Because you're evaluating individuals, you're evaluating your offense, and you're evaluating production. And this offense had it in the preseason. You don't just all of a sudden, okay, disappear after performing very well in the preseason as an offense. Yes, preseason doesn't matter. But yes, preseason does matter because it's a part of the progress and the steps that are necessary to carry something over into the regular season to continue to build. And they built in the offseason. They built in the preseason and through training camp. I don't know what else to say in that. I expected more on Sunday. I didn't see it. But I expect this offense to be better than what was shown on Sunday because I saw the signs of it being better in the preseason and on a daily basis in practice.
This one from the 904, there's nothing that gives me any optimism, and it sucks because on Saturday I had a bunch of optimism. Well, we hope that the passage of time will rectify that.
Well, you know what really sucks is Saturday when Virginia had that game against Notre Dame.
Here we go.
And Virginia has a cornerback in a three-deep coverage, and the fastest wide receiver that Notre Dame has, you're going to let him get over the top on you.
Yeah.
That sucks.
You know why, Tony?
Will Fuller sucked.
Yeah, Will Fuller's pretty good there for Notre Dame.
You know what else? Notre Dame players are typically smarter than those Cavaliers.
And it was the backup quarterback, by the way. The starting quarterback for Notre Dame broke his ankle.
Right.
And here's the other thing. I had breakfast bet on that, okay, and pride. Because of Tim Walsh, who's in the salary cap department here with the Jaguars, I'm texting him the whole time going, yeah, the Golden Domers are no longer golden. And then they come back.
And now you've got to live with that. Live with yourself. All right, last two here. We're talking about Jason Meyer struggling from the texter in the 904 because Scobie did that much better in Pittsburgh, right? Right, all caps. Nobody's saying that. But
this is not about Scobie.
It doesn't matter now. If Scobie did great or poorly, is Myers good enough? I mean, kickers, you know, whether you made the right decision, Myers v. Scobie, doesn't mean Myers is necessarily good enough. I'm not saying he's not. But it doesn't really matter now. It's irrelevant whether Scobie does well or poorly in Pittsburgh.
No, it doesn't matter. But I think if you're, you know, a Jaguars fan, you want to see Jason Myers do well and Scobie not do well just so that you can feel good about the decision that was made. So, I mean, I understand that part of it, but it's not about Josh Scobie.
All right, final one as we wrap up. Does Jeff Loggeman take offense to the commercial that says no one knows the Jaguars like Johnny O?
No, because, you know, Johnny O knows a lot. John Osher is a very good reporter, and I will tell you this, and this is no kidding here. This is no joke. When John covered this Jaguars football team when I was a player, I had great respect for him because I thought that he did an excellent job. When this football team went and covered the Indianapolis Colts for years, the Indianapolis Colts put out the worst press release in football, especially back when they had Peyton Manning. All they did was put a bunch of numbers together about Peyton Manning. But if you wanted to find out the pulse of the Indianapolis Colts football team, which, you know, part of my job is doing what I do, is to find out what's going on with the opponent for preparation for the game. I read everything that John Osher put out there. And even to this day, I still read everything that John Osher puts out there because John has a great feel for a football team and he's an excellent writer.
I hope you archive that one, Tyler. We'll play that for the Ono's man a little bit later on in the week. That's it for us, though, on time. We try to stoke a rivalry between the two of
them. That's fine.
You know, that's what we do.
I will give John credit. Sometimes if he doesn't know, he will ask me questions. So a lot of things that he writes are answers from me.
There you go.
Hey, how about that?
That's a better follow-up right there. Good stuff. Jeff Logman, where are we going to see and hear you this week? Give us the rundown.
We have, Jaguars All Access is tonight because we couldn't be on the air last night with the Monday night doubleheader.
Okay.
I think we're having Paul Posluszny on set, Black Sheep, weather permitting. And then on Thursday,
Gus Bradley Show.
And then we also have Jaguars Thursday, which I won't be on tonight. I've got an appearance to do for the Jaguars here in one of the clubs. And then Gus Bradley television show Saturday night, Sunday morning, pregame show on WJXT, also pregame show on Jaguars.com, and, of course, the game broadcast. And then, of course, Saturday morning with the Nimnik Outdoor Show.
He's all over the place, ladies and gentlemen. He is Jeff Logman, and we appreciate him stopping by at Logs56 on Twitter. The professor taking the rest of the week off from Jaguars today. For Fat Tony, for Jeff Logman, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, thanks to Gus Bradley for weighing in with his thoughts. I'm Mike Dempsey. That wraps it up on a Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today signing off. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!